Now, I'll introduce our panel joining us in a few minutes, but it's fair to say the most important developments this weekend are taking place in the Middle East. The ceasefire in Gaza has been in place for more than 24 hours, and anyone watching live pictures over the course of the day will have seen thousands of Gazans returning to the north of the Strip to survey the devastation wrought by 2 years of Israeli bombardment, in which over 67,000 people have been killed. US President Donald Trump is due to land in Israel tomorrow. It's expected that Hamas will release the living hostages abducted on October 7th, 2023, by Monday. Israel is also to release hundreds of Palestinians serving prison sentences or kept in arbitrary detention under the terms of this deal. I've been speaking to the US-Israeli citizen Jonathan Dekel-Ken, whose son Sagi was kidnapped by Hamas along with around 250 others on the morning of the fatal attack that killed 1,200 people. Sagi was released back in February. I began by asking Jonathan how the families of those remaining hostages will be feeling as they await the return of their loved ones. So Jonathan, coming from the perspective of somebody who has been through this, families awaiting the release of hostages on Monday, where are they now? What are they going through as they look forward to the release of their loved ones?
Well, that's a very obvious question. It's difficult to answer, to be honest. There are, I would say the first is a combination or a balance of some kind between fear, that I'll describe in a moment, and joy at the reunion. The fear is multi-layered, of course, because although it seems very close, the families know perfectly well that an awful lot could go sideways between now and then, either from Hamas's side or Israel's side or some other actor in all of this horrific situation. But there's another fear at work here. These men, if we're speaking just of the hostages who we believe are still alive, have gone through a little over 2 years of a living hell. We know for absolute sure that they have been starved nearly to death, tormented, tortured, living under the worst possible sanitary conditions, in fear of death every moment, be it from their Hamas captors or from a friendly fire, from Israeli bombs and so on. So there are very, very mixed feelings, I'm sure, and it's really difficult, I can attest to, sort of keeping yourself together. But we also must remember, Colm, that of the 48 hostages who remain, at least 28 of them have already been murdered. So only remains will be returned. We're hoping only 28. We really don't know. And for those 28, Hamas has already said, and this is in effect been already repeated by President Trump and some in the Israeli authorities, that Hamas may not be able to return all of the bodies, all of the remains, because they can't locate them. And for those parents, not only is the horror of receiving back, again, with this feeling of closure, perhaps, their loved ones, the remains of their loved ones for proper burial, from what we have heard, there are at least 8 families that, at least in the at this stage, will actually not be receiving anything at all.
And as a hostage family, if those 8 remains are left unfound and unreturned, does in a way the trauma and the mourning continue for all of the families?
Absolutely. I mean, I can say firsthand, Sagi, my son, was returned in February through an earlier negotiated agreement. And he and every other hostage who has come home have been very clear that they can only really be free and reengage in life after all the hostages are home. And look, for us, for Sagi and I, of the 48 hostages, 9 of them are from our home, our small kibbutz community on the border with Gaza. Of those 9, we know for sure that 5 have already been murdered. Of those 5, they are the children of very close friends of mine who I saw grow up, or friends of mine for 45 years. And if they don't come home, if we can't bury them in our own land, there will be no peace for anyone. And so we hope that through this agreement, there will be a mechanism, probably an international mechanism, for the recovery of all bodies, not just, of course, the remaining Israeli hostages, but of course, the bodies of those Palestinians in Gaza killed during the course of the war, whose bodies have not yet been recovered.
Sagi was released in February. How is he now?
He's about as well as a person could be under the circumstances. We've been very blessed. The reunion with his three daughters, one of whom he only met after he was released. She was born 2 months into his captivity. That reunion has been absolutely joyous. It's been a process. He's been home now for about 7 months. The physical rehabilitation is ongoing. He suffered very serious wounds on October 7th. Before he was taken captive, and those were not treated properly in Gaza. So he's recovering from those, and of course the after effects of malnutrition and horrible health conditions and the trauma, as I said before, of that double threat every day for 498 days of torment and murder by his captors, or death by friendly fire from Israeli tank shells, bombs from the air, and so on. But all things considered, he is doing as best as a person can do. But again, he and all of us are perfectly aware that we can only be at peace again with ourselves and in our country when the madness in Gaza ends and all of the hostages come home.
In November 2023 and in subsequent ceasefires, there was a successful release of hostages. Is there any sense that a lot of what is being achieved now could have been achieved earlier, and pain and lives could have been saved?
Well, Colm, I've been on record at least since, I believe, March or April of 2024, so a couple of months after the initial hostage release, that our government, the Israeli government, could have, or should have, in fact, moved faster and with more urgency towards ceasefire and hostage release. That clearly did not happen. It took then, in November, December of 2023, and then again around Sagi's release in January, February of 25, and now again in October of 2025, what it took was enormous pressure, mostly from the White House and the Oval Office, in order to force these parties, Hamas and Israel, to simply do the right thing.
Yeah, and I suppose people like yourself will have looked at those missed opportunities. And in the intervening periods, then, the military campaign relentlessly continued. And the ostensible position of the Israeli government was that it was being done in the name of the hostages. I mean, as hostage families, how did you feel about that?
Well, I think you only would need to look at the TV again, starting really in October of 2023, the mass protests in the streets of Israel, hundreds of thousands of people out in the streets every week in a relatively small country. I mean, translating this into the United States, it would mean 40, 50 million people in the street every week to protest against our own government and its actions. So it was not just the feeling of the hostage families, initially about 240-something hostage families. It was the vast majority of the country. Polling in Israel from all sources has shown now for over a year that at least 70% of the country, of the citizens of Israel, have wanted this war to end and the hostages to be released. This Israeli government, and unfortunately I knew this on October 8th of 2023, would only enter negotiations with Hamas if forced, you know, with extreme urgency by whoever the inhabitant of the Oval Office was. And tragically, that has turned out to be true. Now, again, on the other side, there were certainly ways to pressure Hamas more, whether it's the Gulf states, whether it's certain European states, for Hamas to do the right thing. Because, of course, this never would have happened had Hamas simply returned the hostages on October 8th, 2023.
What are your thoughts now on the broader issues? This is phase one, a release of Palestinians detained in Israel and a release of the live and the dead hostages in Gaza. But for the subsequent phases, phase two, phase three, the day after, and the broader prospects of peace and self-determination for the Palestinians potentially, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think like most Israelis, I'm focused mostly right now on making sure that the hostages come home and the fighting stops. This is going to be a massive undertaking to get to a better post-Hamas future for Gaza, first of all. I think the blueprint that President Trump has laid out is workable. I mean, clearly there's a need for massive financial and administration intervention from Gulf states and other countries, be it Turkey or United States, Europeans, that is for sure. I think the overriding issue here, however, I mean, that's about finances and goodwill from the outside. I think the most difficult issue right now in our region between Israelis and Palestinians of all kinds is figuring out how to overcome or defuse hate, the hatreds that were there before October 7th, to be sure. But the events of the last 2 years have inflamed that so very much that, you know, really, in a sense, the long-term discussions of Palestinian statehood of this kind or another, I think they're contingent on, of course, changes in leadership for sure, but also a process that I don't know how to make it happen, but I know that it must. Being, you know, an Israeli that simply walks through the streets every day, a process of somehow diffusing hatred on both sides. That is going to be the hardest nut to crack for sure.
And that was Jonathan Dekelkhen, whose son was taken and held hostage by Hamas for 16 months, giving me his personal reaction to what's going on earlier. Now, let me introduce the panel joining us this weekend. They're Niall Collins, Fianna Fáil TD for Limerick County and Minister of State at the Department of Justice. He's joining us from our Limerick studio. We have Lynn Boylan, Sinn Féin MEP for Dublin, Ciarán O'Hearn, Labour Party TD for Dublin South West. Thanks all for joining us this afternoon. Lynn Boylan, to you first. You're chair of the European Parliament's Delegation for Relations with Palestine. What's your read of what's being billed as the beginnings of a peace deal here, particularly when there are concerns being raised that Palestinian voices have not been heard loudly in its design to date?
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, everybody has to welcome a cessation of the onslaught that the Palestinians have been going under for the last 2 years, the genocide that's been taking place. So everybody has to welcome any level of a ceasefire. I do have very serious concerns, and I raised these in the Parliament last week, about the fact that there is no mandate from the Palestinians. They're not included in this peace process. There's definitely a lot of questions around once, you know, the hostages are handed over, whether Israel will, you know, live up to its side of the bargain, given that in the previous ceasefire they had 972 breaches of the previous ceasefire, and in fact it's Israel who has breached the ceasefires every single time. I also have concerns around this international stability force, who are going to be the troops that will make up that, and why there's no UN reference in the 20-point plan. So I think there's very, very serious questions to be asked about the peace proposal, but ultimately right now I think Palestinians are breathing a sigh of relief that the bombs have stopped raining down on them, and we need to flood the area with aid. And that's also a question in this peace proposal, how that aid will be delivered. It needs to be done by UNRWA and those organisations that have been delivering aid for years in Gaza and have been prevented to do so in the last months.
Niall Collins, leverage and pressure works, we see, in order to achieve a deal like this. We know that. So what's required to keep the sides compliant, and what should Europe be doing?
Well, there has to be absolute vigilance in terms of, scrutiny and oversight of this deal. I think in the first instance, I want to commend the efforts in particular of Qatar, Turkey and Egypt, as well as the United States in terms of getting us to this point. It's hugely, hugely welcome and long overdue. And we have had previous ceasefires, which unfortunately were broken. We have 67,000 people dead. But I think we need to seize the opportunity now, particularly to allow that surge of humanitarian aid into Gaza, which is so, so badly needed. And obviously, we want to see the hostages returned and indeed the hundreds of Palestinians who are, unlawfully incarcerated by the State of Israel. They have to be released as part of this peace deal. So there has to be proper scrutiny. The regional partners in the area who are going to come in to oversee the implementation of the agreement, I think we need to see that take shape very, very soon. And I think we also have to have, we have to commence in parallel to that, a conversation in relation to the reconstruction of Gaza. That is going to be a real monumental undertaking. We have to continue to work with the Global Alliance in terms of trying to achieve the two-state solution. I was in the Middle East. I was in Palestine myself a number of years ago.
Just before you get into that, though, Niall Collins, when you say a conversation between what parties and looking at what outcome, I mean, who should be footing the bill for the reconstruction of Gaza?
Well, that's something that I can't answer now. I mean, obviously, the State of Israel will have a major role to play in that. The United States are going to have a major role to play in that. The European Union has a major responsibility. Within the European Union, we have seen, and Ireland has been to the forefront, the Irish government has been to the forefront in terms of changing the travel of direction and the mindset across the European Union. We haven't got there yet in terms of bringing everybody on board, but I think it's crucially important that we see real progress. It's badly, badly wanted.
Okay. We know that the UNIFIL mission in South Lebanon is going to potentially come to an end in a year. I know there are concerns around that, but Irish peacekeepers may be redeployed elsewhere. Could you see a stabilisation force in Gaza as being a mission on which the Irish expertise built up in Lebanon and elsewhere could be deployed?
Well, look, I'd be open to consideration, anything like that. I'd have a very, very open mind in terms of our approach to that. The point that I want to make, Colm, also is we can't take our eye off of the West Bank, the proliferation of new settler communities and the devastating impact that is having on the West Bank and in East Jerusalem is very, very real. I've been there myself a number of years ago. I've been to Ramallah, I've been to Hebron. I've walked those areas. I've seen the devastating impact, how bad actors backed by the State of Israel.
Okay, seeing as you raised that point, before I get to Ciarán Ahern for his reaction, if you're against illegal settlements on the occupied West Bank, why hasn't the Occupied Territories Bill been passed with services in it, which the European Commission has said is legit?
Yeah, I've been a long-time supporter of the Occupied Territories Bill. I sponsored it in opposition. I sponsored it in Dáil-Éireann on a previous occasion. It's on the priority list. It's the top item on the priority list for the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. And the government is actively considering the report and the pre-legislative scrutiny. There is obviously a conversation and a decision has to be taken in relation to services. But look, regardless of that, I can't give you an answer in the here and now in relation to services.
I do want to get to Ciarán Ahern because we haven't heard from yet. What's your reaction to this, Ciarán Ahern? What's a productive role that Ireland could play in trying to get European influence on the ultimate outcome of what gets built on foot of this ceasefire?
Well, look, the first thing is to say that we absolutely welcome this ceasefire. This is the most basic demand of the millions of people who have protested around the world and in Dublin and across Ireland on an almost weekly basis that the genocide will end and that aid is finally let into Gaza in terms of food, in terms of basic medical supplies. The US government, the EU, Israel, they have had no problem funding this war. So they should absolutely step up to the mark
EU member states.
EU member states, yeah. Apologies. Yeah, EU members. certain EU member states have had absolutely no problem funding this war, providing weapons. So now is the time for them to fund the rebuilding of Gaza. And that's really important for us. And we do need to see the UN playing a role in this. You know, this is a time where we want to be bolstering the UN, not turning away from it by removing the triple lock and things like that. And Ireland should be playing our role, being a strong voice for multilateralism and multinational. And as a small country, it is absolutely in our interest that the UN has a role, so that it is not just large states that control what happens across the world. And as Niall has mentioned, you know, the occupied territories remain occupied. So we will keep the pressure on the government to pass the Occupied Territories Bill.
And on that question of a peacekeeping mission, this is something Labour supports, is actively advocating for in Gaza?
We're not at that point yet, but I think we would absolutely, if it came to playing a role in a UN peacekeeping mission in Gaza, absolutely, that is a role that our peacekeepers would be very well positioned to take on.
And only under the auspices of the UN?
Yes.
All right. Lynn Boylan, but before we get to the big picture diplomatic effort, what should Ireland be doing?
Well, first and foremost is passing the Occupied Territories Bill without delay. There's no excuse for how long it's been dragged out. And like, it's very clear the Irish government were hoping that the EU were going to take action and that they could, you know, weigh in behind them. I think now the pressure will come off the EU, unfortunately, and I would encourage people to keep protesting and keep campaigning to make sure that they don't take their foot off the pedal, because we had reached a point where Ursula von der Leyen said she was going to take actions. Now with this peace process, I think that pressure is going to be relieved of them. And I sincerely hope that they do progress. But I have my doubts, because, I think that they were forced into that position at the EU. I mean, when you talk about the rebuilding of Palestine, the EU is the largest donor of aid into the Palestinian territory, so both in Gaza and in the West Bank. There's been no conditionality in terms of when that infrastructure in the past has been built, being destroyed by Israel. No consequences whatsoever. So for European people who are paying their taxes and money is being used, and I have no argument with the money being used, but how is it a case where Israel can then just destroy infrastructure and walk away without being held responsible for it? So I think any rebuilding of the Gaza Strip, one, can't be speculative. It can't be about real estate, whether that's the US, Israel, or the Arab states for that matter. This land belongs to the Palestinians. And when it is built and when that infrastructure is rebuilt, there has to be conditions on it that Israel cannot come back in and just destroy it and walk away without the consequences. Right. I'd also like to see the EU talk about de-radicalisation of the state of Israel as well, because there's a lot of conditionality put on the Palestinian Authority around school books, around what they're doing. There's no conditionality around the relationship that the EU has with Israel and the radical elements that are in that society.
Niall Collins, I suppose just it's worth turning to the short term here and the humanitarian effort. What's your understanding at this stage of what's been proposed would be sent to Gaza as Ireland's contribution to the humanitarian effort? We've seen talk of 750 tents at the moment. Is that the beginning and the end of it, or can we expect more?
Well, we've never been found wanting in terms of stepping up to the plate. We just in the week that we've had the budget, we've seen an increase in the amount of money that we've made available to our overseas aid budget, and I think that's very, very important. So I don't obviously have the details, the nitty gritty details of what bits and pieces, if I can describe it like that, will be provided in terms of equipment.
Is there even a figure in mind as to the level to which Ireland will intervene with humanitarian aid? What kind of a discretionary fund could be deployed at this stage, and what size is it?
Yeah, look, I just don't have that in the here and now. But suffice to say this. As I said to you at the top of the programme, we have absolutely changed the mindset across Europe. On foot of Ireland leading the way in terms of the recognition of the state of Palestine, we've seen very significant players like France, the United Kingdom, Canada, Malta, Australia.
If Ireland enjoys such an influential position, is its failure to pass the Occupied Territories Bill then an even greater omission if you've been able to lead the way on other things?
And that's the point that I want to get to. It's a priority. It's top of the priority legislation for this term. I want to see it passed. The Taoiseach and the Taoiseach have given commitments that it will be passed.
But people will ask Niall Collins, if this is what a priority looks like, what does a Tier 3 priority look like?
Well, if you'd allow me to finish a couple of sentences and It will be a powerful international statement when Ireland passes the Occupied Territories Bill. There is no doubt about it, because it will be a groundbreaking piece of legislation. The effect of it may be minimal at the outset, but I think right across the international stage, it will send out a really, really strong message to the international community. Look, there's no getting away from this. Israel has been acting as a rogue state, completely in defiance of international and humanitarian law for a long, long, long time. And I agree with a lot of what Lynn Boylan has said in terms of other mechanisms of accountability that have to be applied to the state of Israel. So the international community isn't all on the same page. We have done a huge, huge job of work to bring a lot of people onto the same page that we're on in terms of our approach to this. So we won't be found wanting, and the legislation is priority, and I certainly for one are adamant that I want to see it passed, and I'm sitting on the government benches, and I'll be using my voice from within government to make sure that that's progressed as soon as possible.
Okay. Ciarán Hearn, I suppose we know your party's position on the Occupied Territories Bill, but on the question of the humanitarian effort that Ireland should be putting into Gaza, do you have a figure? Do you have an idea as to what Ireland should be providing?
No, I'm glad to hear that we have increased our aid budget in this year. Obviously, from the US perspective, it was cut. USAID has been completely dismantled, which is having a hugely detrimental effect across the world, as well as with Irish NGOs.
Do you think Europe should be making up the deficit there?
Yes, absolutely. But I think the US also, the US has to play a role in the rebuilding of Gaza and in providing aid. It just can't. And I mean, we've recognised, one of the other points we need to talk about is that we have recognised the Palestinian state, the Palestinian people as a state, and we need to make sure that their voices are heard and that they can choose their own leadership, that they have a say over the governance, a full say over the governance of their own state, which us and other countries now have recognised as a state.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with more after this.
Saturday with Colm O'Mungon on RTÉ Radio 1.